listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Rachel.
It's Hymnastics! This is about the Olympics, which are they happening right now in this podcast?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
They're happening right now. We're obviously recording ahead of time. And we thought, wouldn't it be fun? We haven't done a series in a while. Wouldn't it be fun to do a series based on the Olympics that actually makes sense for us? And I don't know whose idea it was. I can't remember at this point. But we have a gymnastics series, even though gymnastics is not a Winter Olympic sport. We're going to ignore that fact. It is gymnastics in honor of the Winter Olympics. And we have three episodes.
We didn't want to wait until the next Summer Olympics.
That is correct. We wanted to do
it. A good idea needs to be used while it's still fresh.
I think it's more funny that it doesn't really actually make sense. Because we've got three episodes for your listening enjoyment. Today's is a story time. We're gonna award a gold medal today. The next one is still TBD.
It's a mystery. Yeah, I was just looking and I was like, I gotta get on.
That is Erin's episode. So in a
week, that's one reason we love the Olympics. We don't know the outcomes of every single event. Like, there's surprises. There are upsets. There's Erin.
Yeah. It's true. So that will be a surprise for all of us.
Yes.
Next week.
Yes.
And our third episode is a write this challenge. And
that's
so
right.
We're announcing that today. So y'all can put your writing hats on over the next few days and write something for us that we'll record for the third episode in this gymnastics series. Rachel, tell us about the Write This Challenge.
Okay, all you writers out there, this is a challenge that came to me one day and I was like, we need to do this. So you may or may not be familiar with the common meter for hymn tunes. Now, of course, the meter is how long each line is, how many syllables there are in it. And if you've studied poetry, you know all about this, the iambs and the anapests, et cetera, et cetera. If you look at the back of your hymnal on page 1007, you will see tunes, metrical. And right down there is common meter, CM. Mm-hmm. It is 8 pairs of stressed, unstressed syllables, followed by 6, followed by 8, followed by 6. This may sound obtuse until you remember that this is exactly how Amazing Grace was written.
Yep.
Because New Britain, the tune that it is assigned to, follows this exact format. Mm-hmm. So if you want to hear the rhythm in your head, you will hear da 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 da.
It's very common.
Very common, especially in hymnody.
Yes.
Why it's called common meter.
Mm-hmm.
You can check whether you are writing in common meter by figuring out whether or not the verse you are writing fits with theme song from Gilligan's Island. Which
or
is
Amazing
the
Grace.
Or Amazing Grace.
Or Amazing Grace, but Gilligan's Island is more fun.
Okay,
well,
other
that's
tunes.
True.
A lot of other tunes. There's one very famous one, Anasmon. Da 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 da. Tons of hymns are written with this basic meter. I just hummed that because the text was not public domain.
Well, it's not common meter. It's long meter. Never mind.
Yeah.
What's that?
I said, is it Old Hundredth? No, it's long meter, not common meter.
Nope. Double check that.
Yep.
So your goal is to write a hymn verse in a common meter, but for an uncommon occasion.
Yes!
Common meter, uncommon occasion.
I love this.
We have lots of hymns in our hymnal for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
We have so many for Easter.
Mm-hmm.
We have like one for New Year's.
Well, it's like
maybe two.
Yeah.
Two for New Year's. We have some that we like work in for Reformation. Mm-hmm. I mean, A Mighty Fortress, obviously. But there are so many feasts and commemorations for which we have very few hymns. So we always end up with the For All the Faithful Women or By All Your Saints in Warfare or one of these fill in the blank, plug in the verse kind of hymns. But I was thinking, what if we as Lutheran ladies could look back at our church calendars, because we've been talking a lot about the church year.
We have.
It's true.
And look in our hymnals and say, well, there's a gap. We don't have enough hymns for the commemoration of St. Peter and Paul.
Or,
yeah.
Or for, I don't know, Pentecost.
Lazarus.
That's a good one.
Abraham and Lazarus, though. Surprise.
Yeah. Ah.
Not the one you were thinking of.
Oh, yeah.
If you have a biblical name, you could write one about the saint that you're named after.
That is true.
I may or may not do that. We'll see.
A hymn verse for Sarah. We just celebrated the confession of St. Peter.
Yeah.
That would be a great one to have a hymn for.
The conversion of St. Paul. Those are back-to-back Sundays this year, actually.
Indeed. Holy Cross Day. So many feasts, festivals, seasons, commemorations in the church year do not have much dedicated hymnody associated with.
Mm-hmm.
So this is your challenge. Common meter, uncommon occasion.
Okay, I like it.
Back to you, Sarah.
I love this. This is always really fun to get poetry, hymnody written for our ladies. Are they going to tell us what tune they would like to use with their hymn stanza also?
That would be a good thing. If you have a tune that you would like to assign it to, tell us what the tune is that you are imagining in your head. Make sure, please, that it is public domain.
There we go.
We cannot sing them to Gilligan's Island.
Common meter, public domain. Let us know what you want. Otherwise, we'll pick one for you.
That's true. There are a lot to choose from.
CM. Yes. Yes. So if you're not a writer and you're like, I would love to participate in this, but I'm not a writer. We don't always do this. We have an additional way for you to enter into this drawing.
Gymnastics challenge.
Because there are prizes this time too. We don't always have prizes. And I will tell you about those in a second. So if you are uninspired by writing, which I'm sorry, but and also enter by singing or playing your favorite hymn for us, because some of you would rather sing or play than write, and that's fine. We are allowing you this time to record a video of yourself playing on whatever instrument you want to play. Actually, it'd be really fun if we got, like, I don't know, a harmonica or like a accordion.
Although all of you organists out there who like to do your hymn preludes, this would be a great time.
Yeah, record yourself playing or singing your favorite hymn. We have no restrictions on what it is.
Except public domain, please.
And post your video publicly so that we can access it. So that could be a Facebook public video, Instagram, if your profile is public, Twitter/X, YouTube, a Google link would probably work too, as long as we are able to view it, because you are going to use that link on the entry form.
We don't want a file.
We
don't
do not want your video file.
Send us your files. They're too big.
I would like the link, not the file.
You break our building.
That is true. IT would be very mad if we started doing that.
Don't send them.
So we will have a form for all of you that want to enter into this. It will be the same form for everybody. It will be very clear how you're going to enter this. So you will either enter with your original hymn in common meter or a link to your public video of you singing or playing. And that form will be in our Lutheran Ladies Lounge group and on our Instagram page and in the show notes for this episode. So you will be able to find it.
And if you are having trouble figuring out whether the hymn you want to share is public domain, simply open your Lutheran service book and look down to the tiny type at the very bottom of the page. And if it says text and music public domain, as many of them do, you're good.
Yep.
If it says text or music copyright, maybe pick your second favorite hymn to share with us.
Correct. Another way to know that is if you go to hymnary.org and you find the text and tune available for you to see, it is public domain because they do not post the text or the music of non-public domain hymns.
Okay. That is a good thing, especially since LSB is now 20 years old.
Correct.
And some of the songs that were copyrighted at that time may now have been public domain.
Yeah, I've found a few that are copyright in the hymnal but are now public domain. So that is another way to check it, especially if you don't have a hymnal in your house and you still know which one you want to do, you can check it on hymnary.
That's true. I can't wait. I really can't wait to be able to share these with everybody.
I know.
Yeah. Sarah.
Yes.
Are there prizes?
Guys.
Sarah, tell them what they win.
I'm so excited. Okay. So Elizabeth Pittman from CPH, who we've had on, she is offering 3 grand prizes. I'll tell you first, though, everybody that enters is getting a sticker pack. I'm stoked about these
stickers. Brand new.
Brand new stickers. We normally just send one. We're sending 3 because Brie Grzebski, who you all know and love, Rachel's daughter, Ella, and Lorraine Hester, who has also been on the podcast, all 3 of them designed an original Hymnastic sticker for us. So everybody that enters will get a sticker pack of those stickers. It's going to be great. And probably also a Hymn Nerd magnet because we have those also. And they're fun. If you enter into this, we will draw 3 names for 3 prizes. Huge thank you to CPH for providing these prizes for Hymnastics. Abide With Us, Daily Hymn Devotions. That's a new devotional book.
I have been hearing good things about it.
I have it. It's fantastic. If you love hymns and you also like doing devotions, which hopefully is all of you, it's a great book. Eternal Anthems, Volumes 1 and 2. These have been out for a little while, but they're like the short reader's edition version of the Lutheran Service Book Companion to the Hymns. So if you don't want the gigantic set, these are 2 shorter books that have a lot of like the most popular hymns. So they're excellent books if you love hymnody. And the grand prize is a genuine leather Lutheran Service Book.
Oh my goodness.
I'm a little mind blown. Also a little jealous because we can't enter. But this is a beautiful new edition of the Lutheran Service Book. It is genuine leather, black with like gold embossing. It's it's beautiful. It's beautiful. So that's the grand prize. These will also come with a CPH gift card because CPH is amazing.
Wow.
So yes, those are the grand prizes. Everyone gets a sticker pack. The link will be available when this podcast drops, and everyone's got to enter by midnight on February 12th, and that will be listed on the form. It's going to be so great. And then we'll talk about everything that was entered in our podcast. That will be the 3rd of the Hymnastic series that we're recording on the 13th, which is why you have to enter by the 12th. Okay, it's time for some story time.
Ooh, this is also fun.
Correct.
I'm not disappointed.
This is like in the Olympics when they do one of those, you know, biography stories of one of the yes. athletes.
I can hear the inspiring music. The violins are in the background.
Exactly.
Maybe I'll throw some in. I don't know.
Tell us about one of these champions.
Yes. This is a story. Normally I have to dig and like put together a whole bunch of resources to write a story. This time I had to like restrain myself from writing everything because there are so many resources available. I had to like pare stuff down. So we aren't here for 4 hours. Today is a story of Fanny Crosby, who was, quote, the most prolific of all 19th century American sacred songwriters, end quote. We can't claim her as a Lutheran lady. Usually these story times are about Lutheran ladies or Lutheran adjacent people, I suppose. We can't claim her as Lutheran. However, when a woman has penned literally thousands of well-loved Christian hymns, she deserves an episode. And here we are.
Is she what the young people would call goated?
I think so.
I guess we'll find out, won't we?
Yes, wow. I would say so. Her Wikipedia page, which I will say is my main reference for the rest of this. I did check the sources that were cited, and boy, her Wikipedia page is so long. It has a table of contents, which you don't see very often. Not only writing about her history, but there's 349 citations of 30 references. So it is intense. There are so many places you can read about her if you would like to read about her. Some of them are available online, too. I was looking through archive.org. Okay. Some public domain books that were written a long time ago that you can read through if you really want to. Someone or many people took great pains to write a very detailed history of Fanny Crosby. Yeah. I am obviously not going to tell you everything because you can go read the Wikipedia article. There's so much. It's a rarity for these story times, but this is really fun.
Yeah, normally the Wikipedia article is like a half a paragraph and the citations are very defunct.
Yeah, not these. These are all alive and well. Articles. It's really cool. I mean, she's an American gospel hero, basically. So in our American evangelical Christianity culture, everyone knows her. So Fanny Crosby was an American mission worker, poet, lyricist, and composer who wrote somewhere between 8,000 and 9,000 hymns, which is just insane, and gospel songs. more than 100 million copies printed. Wow. Outside of Lutheran hymnals, I don't think any of her hymns are in Lutheran hymnals, at least not in LSB. I did not check TLH or LW. I kind of doubt we have any. Rachel's double checking me. We don't have any in Lutheran service books. So
you
like,
just sent me on a goose chase.
So if you pick up any like Reformed, Baptist, Presbyterian, Methodist hymnal, you will probably find her hymns in those hymnals.
Oh, I have several memorized.
That doesn't surprise me. I brought my Sing hymnal from Keith and Kristen Getty. This is probably one of the newest hymnals on the market. Mm-hmm. It's less than 6 months old, I think. Maybe it's less than a year old. I don't know. Anyway, there's a long list of Fanny Crosby hymns in this hymnal. So her music is still alive and well. What else did she do? She wrote over 1,000 secular poems. She had 4 books of poetry published, 2 best-selling autobiographies, co-wrote popular secular political patriotic songs, and co-wrote at least 5 cantatas based on biblical and patriotic themes.
Uh-huh.
So we are hereby awarding her the gold medal for hymn writing prolifery on this episode.
Okay.
Because no one else comes close. I even Googled like what woman wrote the most hymns, and it was Fanny Crosby. And I was like, all right, it's her. It's her.
Mm-hmm.
She was also known as the, quote, queen of gospel songwriters and, quote, mother of modern congregational singing in America. So that's high praise. Mm-hmm. Most American hymnals have her hymns in them. Her hymns are classic revival music, which is also not really something in our Lutheran tradition. And Ira Sankey, who shows up multiple times in the story, he was an American gospel singer and composer, long associated with Dwight Moody. So Moody and Sankey had this series of religious revival campaigns in America and Britain during the end of the 18th century. So he was one of the pioneers in introducing this musical style that influenced church services and evangelical campaigns. And the hymns that he wrote or popularized, some of them are still being sung. I think Moody's come up a couple of times, I think, on episodes. So Ira Sankey attributed their success in evangelical campaigns to her hymnody. And there's always this little thing, though, because of the time period when she was writing, which was the late 1800s, early 1900s, and being a woman in the days of very strange copyright laws at this time, the copyrights were attributed to the composer, not to the writer. She was very likely exploited by the industry.
Absolutely, she was.
That copyright to the composer, she was not paid very much for her writings. Mm. It didn't really seem to bother her. She wrote in her 1906 autobiography that she wrote her hymns, quote, in a sanctified manner, end quote, and not for the money. So she wasn't concerned about it. So I won't make a big deal out of it. It's just that always seems to come up in these stories. This is my favorite quote. According to the Dictionary of American Religious Biography, quote, by modern standards, her work may be considered mawkish or too sentimental, but their simple, homey appeals struck a responsive chord in Victorian culture. Their informal ballad style broke away from the staid, formal approach of earlier periods, also probably a lot of German hymns, touching deep emotions in singers and listeners alike. Instead of dismissing her words as maudlin or saccharine, audiences thrilled to them as the essence of genuine, heartfelt Christianity. End quote. This was also the time when Catherine Winkworth was translating, and we've talked before about her translations are also more flowery than maybe the originals are. So some of this is just the time period in which she's writing. Her hymns were really popular, especially in those Methodist, Presbyterian, Baptist denominations, because they emphasized experiences, emotions, and testimonies with this romanticized relationship with Jesus and the believer. People wanted feel-good hymns, and I think our American religious culture still does. I describe her hymnody kind of as like the dessert and snack of hymns, unless they have false theology in them, which some of them might. I have not gone all through all 8,000 of them. These are very well-beloved hymns.
And many of them have nothing objectionable in them.
Yeah. You may not want a diet of only Fanny Crosby hymns, because we have many, many really good sacramental hymns in our Lutheran tradition. They point you to Jesus.
Yeah.
Which is about all we can ask. So some of her best-known hymns are Pass Me Not, O Gentle Savior, Blessed Assurance, which I feel like everybody knows. Mm-hmm. Jesus is Tenderly Calling You Home, praise him, praise him. Rescue the perishing. I don't know that one. And to God be the glory, which is the other one I know. Yeah, that one. Funny enough, publishers were a little worried about having so many hymns from one composer in their hymnals. So she used nearly 200 pseudonyms in her career.
That's hilarious and wonderful.
So she would be published.
Wow.
So crazy. Are you guys, do you guys know any? I know Rachel, you know a lot of hers.
Oh, yeah. All the ones you just mentioned, I know.
Okay.
Fun story. Sort of bittersweet story. When Ken was first ordained years ago at this point, soon after he started at the church, we had conversations with people about what hymns they loved so that he could plan services appropriately. And one lady, every time she would just ask an older lady, "Pass me not, O gentle Savior." That was her favorite hymn, and all she wanted to do was sing it in church. And I don't think we ever managed to make it happen. Because it was definitely a revivalist hymn.
Yeah.
But that was her favorite hymn. And it always, so I actually went out of my way to learn it because I knew a lot of Fanny Crosby hymns, but I didn't know that one.
Yeah.
Just so that I could understand her.
Yeah.
All right. So, Fanny Jane Crosby was born March 24th, 1820 in Brewster, New York, which if you're not from New York, is about 50 miles north of New York City. A lot of things happened 50 miles north of New York City in this story. Mm-hmm. She was the only child of Jane and Mercy Crosby, who were both relatives of Enoch Crosby, the Revolutionary War spy, if you know your Revolutionary War history.
Wow.
John was a widower and he had one child from his previous marriage. John and Mercy might have been first cousins. Ope.
Huh.
We don't really know for sure. This was embarrassing for Fanny, though, and she wrote that she knew nothing about it. She was very proud of her Puritan heritage, which plays into her religious beliefs. She could trace her ancestry back to Mayflower families, which I think is kind of cool. She was a member of the Daughters of the American Revolution.
Of course.
I think it's a big deal. I think I've been hearing about the DAR since I was a little kid because we haven't done the paperwork, but I think I could actually join that if I wanted to because of one of my relatives. So I think that's really cool. She is related to famous Crosbys other than Enoch, like Simon Crosby, who was a founder of Harvard College, Howard Crosby, who is a Presbyterian minister and chancellor of New York University, Ernest Howard Crosby was a new abolitionist, and singers Bing and Bob Crosby. So she's
really?
Yeah. Huh. She has quite a bingo card of famous people that she's related to.
How about Crosby, Stills, and Nash? Any connection?
I am not sure.
But I would kind of think maybe yes. Considering it sounds like she's related to every famous Crosby.
Who sings. Especially.
Correct.
Yeah.
She caught a cold when she was 6 weeks old and developed inflammation of the eyes and these mustard poultices, which sounds really, I can like smell that. They were used as this treatment for her eyes. And she blamed that for damaging her optic nerves and blinding her. But in modern times, modern doctors have thought that her condition was probably congenital and just not really noticed because she was so young. So she was blind from quite a young age.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because mustard and onion poultices were used to combat inflammation.
I could see that they might.
I think it would sting.
Dramatically inflamed.
I'm not a medical expert.
Nerve damage.
Right. Like, I don't know.
Anyway, whatever. We're getting in the weeds.
Yeah.
So,
the bottom line is that
she's blind.
She's blind.
Okay.
Yes. Her dad died when she was 6 months old, so she was raised by her mom, Mercy, and her mom's mom, Eunice Paddock Crosby. And when I was reading that, I was like, this is a Eunice and Lois moment from Timothy's story and how they shaped his faith. This is a Eunice and Mercy in this story, and those women really shaped Fanny's faith. They helped her memorize these really long Bible passages, which feels like a very Puritanish thing to do. Mm-hmm. Also, just the name Mercy is a very name. When Fanny was 3, they all moved to North Salem, New York, which is also about 50 miles north of Manhattan, where her grandma Eunice was raised. And when she was 5, she was examined by a doctor who said her blindness was permanent. So this was... Mm-hmm. This was a thing for her. At age 8, she wrote her first poem about her blindness. So she was writing from a really young age. And we all know that great poetry and hymns come from people who suffer great things. And that tracks here too. Mm-hmm. Although for her story, it doesn't really sound like she was really all that bothered by the fact that she was blind, because she just did stuff.
Yeah.
Later she said, quote, "It seemed intended by the blessed providence of God that I should be blind all my life, and I thank him for the dispensation. If perfect earthly sight were offered me tomorrow, I would not accept it. I might not have sung hymns to the praise of God if I had been distracted by the beautiful and interesting things about me." End quote. So, not super bothered by it.
Uh-huh.
That same year, so in 1828... Fanny and her mother, Mercy, moved to the home of Mrs. Holly in Ridgefield, Connecticut. This was also a family area. They became members of the Presbyterian Church there, and their home life was very rigorously Christian. Her memorization skills put me to shame. Maybe they will for most people. So from the age of 10, she memorized 5 chapters of the Bible each week. I can't even imagine that.
Wow.
Wow. And she would have, but she would have had to have help because she could not have read them by herself.
Right. Uh-huh. So Mrs. Holly, her mom, helped her do this. I think her grandma too.
Wow.
By age 15, she had memorized all 4 Gospels, the Pentateuch, Proverbs, Song of Solomon, and many of the Psalms, which is just, like, no wonder she wrote so many hymns. She had all this Bible rolling around in her head. It just makes sense.
Yeah.
Because you can't help but, like, write about it. From the age of 12, in 1832, she received singing lessons twice a week from a music teacher who came to Mrs. Holly's home. And this is when she started attending the Methodist Episcopal Church and fell in love with their hymns. And the rest is basically history from there. Just before her 15th birthday in 1835... she enrolled in the New York Institution for the Blind, and she was there for 8 years as a student and then 2 more as a graduate student. She learned to play piano, organ, harp, guitar, and became a wonderful soprano singer. So she was just very gifted musically.
So yeah. Music and Bible was pretty much what was inside her head.
Mm-hmm. Yes, which just makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
During this time, her mom, Mercy, remarried and had 3 children. So she ended up, she had, 4 half siblings at this point. But her husband, Mercy's husband, abandoned her 6 years later, which is really sad. And there's nothing more about them. But Fanny had more half siblings. And it seems like they were relatively close to each other too, which is really nice. Mm. Here is the part of the story where P.T. Barnum comes in. Really random reference. And phrenology, the pseudoscience, because you know this is the 1800s with P.T. Barnum and phrenology. Fanny's first...
phrenology, the science of figuring out somebody's personality by feeling the bumps on their head?
Correct.
That phrenology.
Yeah. because Fanny's first published poem was sent without her knowledge to P.T. Barnum, who published it in his The Herald of Freedom in the 1830s. And around this time, a Scottish phrenologist declared her a, quote, born poetress from his phrenology practice. And she was encouraged by this to keep writing, even though she had some opposition from the New York Institution for the Blind, otherwise known as NYIB. Her literary career began in earnest when the New York Herald published her eulogy on President William Henry Harrison's death in 1841. And then from that point, her poems started to be published by the likes of the Saturday Evening Post and other pretty noteworthy publications at the time. She's not very old right now either, which is just crazy. She was at first really reluctant to have her poems published because she thought of them as unfinished. But then she realized it would raise awareness for the New York Institution for the Blind, and she was cool with it. And then she proceeded to publish several books of poetry over the years, some focusing on contemporary events like the Great Famine of Ireland and the Mexican-American War, which were happening at this time. So Fanny graduated from the New York Institution for the Blind in 1843. I'm really glad she was born in a year that I can easily do math. She was 23 years old and immediately began a life of public service. This is just crazy. She joined a group of lobbyists in Washington, D.C., and was the first woman to speak before the United States Senate, which was a fact I tried to verify in other places. And the Google results were all telling me about like senators, which was not the same thing. So I'm assuming this is true. The first woman to speak before the United States Senate when she read a poem arguing for the education of the blind. Over the next 3 years, she continued advocacy for education of the blind, appearing before Congress again and meeting President James K. Polk at her school. And then in 1846, she spoke before a joint session of Congress, along with a delegation from both the Boston and Philadelphia institutions for the blind, calling for education of the blind in those cities. So she became an activist at a pretty young age, doing some really, like, I couldn't imagine. She spoke before Congress like multiple times and met multiple presidents. She even performed in the music room for President Polk and his wife. So she like knew people.
Yeah.
Fanny joined the faculty of the New York Institution for the Blind in 1846. She taught grammar, rhetoric, and history. And she taught right up like until 3 days before she got married in 1858. And I will come back to her love story in just a second. It's really cute. While she was teaching, she became good friends with 17-year-old future president Grover Cleveland. He would transcribe poems for her because she couldn't write very well. So I keep saying that she wrote these things. She composed them in her head and then other people wrote them down for her. One of them at that point was Grover Cleveland. She included a writing from Grover Cleveland in her 1906 autobiography. So they were like actually pretty good friends. She wrote a poem for the dedication of his birthplace in Caldwell, New Jersey that was read in 1913. She wasn't well enough to go, but they read her poem for her. It's really adorable. Okay, so her marriage. She met a boy in 1843, Alexander Van Alfstein Jr. He was also blind and enrolled at the New York Institution for the Blind and was sometimes in some of her classes. He also ended up teaching there from 1855 to 1857, during which they got engaged. And because of the time period that this story happens, she had to resign from teaching in order to get married in March 1858, 3 days before her wedding. So she taught almost until she absolutely had to resign. They got married in Maspeth. I'm guessing that's how you say that. New York.
Sounds right.
On March 5th, they lived in this small home in small town Maspeth, which is current day Queens. So no longer tiny town anymore. Alexander insisted that she used her maiden name for her literary name. I never knew she was married. So she did have a husband and they were married until he died. So he insisted she used her maiden name for her literary name. She did use her married name on like legal documents and stuff. Fanny's faith, obviously like the most important thing to her for her entire life. She was a long member of the Sixth Avenue Bible Baptist Church in Brooklyn. So we've got three different denominations at this point. They're all kind of somewhat related-ish. She was really heavily involved writing hymns like All the Way My Savior Leads Me with minister Robert Lowry. In 1849, there was a six-month cholera epidemic in New York City. But rather than leave, she stayed at the school to nurse the sick back to health. And this was a really difficult time for her. And it seemed to like spark something in her. She realized that she was so caught up in political and social reform that she wasn't actually focusing as much on the Bible and on church. And this was a bit of a turning point for her. So in 1850, the next year, after having a troubling dream, she went to revival meetings at the 13th Street Methodist Church in New York City and during a hymn of consecration felt God's peace. Now, we don't talk this way, but we believe these things can happen to people. We just don't put all of our eggs in the basket of feelings, but they do happen. Following that experience, she attended churches all over the American denominational map, just not Lutheran at that point.
What's a shame.
The LCMS was like baby church at this point anyway. There were other Lutheran churches, but she never, as far as I know, she did not go to Lutheran churches, but she went to the Congregationalist Church of the Pilgrims, led by Henry Ward Beecher, Episcopal, Dutch Reformed, Presbyterian, Methodist Episcopal. She did seem to follow Wesleyan beliefs primarily, which makes a lot of sense in the hymns that she wrote and the churches that she attended. She wasn't publicly identified with the American Holiness movement of the time. She didn't leave a record of, quote, entire sanctification, which is definitely not something that we talk about. But she was a follower of the movement and attended a lot of the Wesleyan Holiness Camp meetings. She wrote Blessed Assurance with the daughter of the, quote, mother of the Holiness movement, Phoebe Palmer.
Hmm.
So she was very much involved in Wesleyan revival camp meetings. Fanny was inspired by Stephen Foster's success at this time. He wrote some great stuff. So she partnered.
Sorry, I laughed. All I can think of, Stephen Foster, he wrote Camp Down Races and all.
Among other things.
He wrote some popular things.
I still love his music. It's delightful.
You know. Sorry, it was just the great stuff and the juxtaposition of that against the songs that I'm best. Oh, Susanna. Yeah, great stuff.
Great stuff.
The sudden incongruity.
Great
it's
stuff.
Sudden incongruity, yes. The joke proper.
Uh-huh.
So, inspired by Stephen Foster, she partnered up with American romantic composer George F. Root to start writing secular songs or parlor songs, which were very popular at this time, especially in popular minstrel shows. Now, minstrel shows had a bad reputation.
Have
for reason.
Have a bad reputation.
I forget yes.
No, so they didn't have a bad reputation at the time, but they should have, and now they do. So,
yeah.
They're very racist.
Correct. Uh-huh. Yes. We do not endorse minstrel shows. So their involvement at the time was obscured on purpose. The Christians at the time were like, these aren't actually all that great. Mm. They obscured their involvement on purpose, but a lot of her music was used in them. A lot of their music together was used in them. She frequently wasn't paid very much with the rights retained by the composer or publisher, but they continued to write this music together for several years. So a lot of those secular songs, that's where they happened. Because that wasn't enough writing for Fanny. She, at this time, wrote three cantata librettos for George Root between 1852 and 1854. The first one was likely the, quote, first secular cantata written by an American, which is wild. Later, in 1886, she wrote a Christmas cantata along with William Howard Doane. And the two of them have a lot of music together. A lot of the hymns in the Sing Hymnal are music by William Howard Doane.
Hmm.
He had become her main collaborator in writing gospel music, composing melodies for about 1,500 of her lyrics, which,
wow,
that's a decent percentage of the amount of things that she wrote. Yeah.
Didn't she write 6,000?
9,000.
Oh, never mind.
It's still a decent percentage.
It's a lot. Yeah.
It's a lot considering that after a while, every tune starts to feel the same.
Yeah.
Like, it's very hard to continue writing hymn tune after unique hymn tune.
Yeah. In 1859, Fanny and Alexander had a daughter named Frances, but sadly, the baby died in her sleep soon after birth, which is very, very sad.
Mm-hmm.
It might have been typhoid. It might have been SIDS, which I don't think was a thing back then, but we don't know.
Was not understood.
Correct. Regardless, Fanny's hymn, Safe in the Arms of Jesus, was most likely inspired by this tragic event. And after this event, for anybody, it would be a very hard thing. Her husband, Alexander, became reclusive. And Fanny never really spoke much about losing her child or being a mother, except in a few interviews later at the end of her life. So she didn't really talk about it much. They moved around frequently. They never owned a home. They lived in rented rooms, like with friends or near friends. Fanny brought in some income from her poems and lyrics, and Alexander played organ at two New York City churches and gave private music lessons. So they were like very much this artistic family.
Mm-hmm.
Writing and playing and all this stuff. They gave away much of their money to the poor, which is why Fanny wasn't concerned that she wasn't making very much, because most of what she was making, she was giving away anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Alexander did compose some for Fanny, but he mostly liked to do like music that didn't have words. Mm-hmm. They did put a hymnal together of just their own compositions, but it was rejected by the publishing company. They said because no one would want a hymnal from just two people. It might have been because the music was so complex. I don't know. Could have been both.
Oh, dear.
During the 1850s and 1860s, so this is Civil War era, Fanny wrote many, many patriotic songs. She was a strong Democrat in the 1840s, but she eventually switched to the anti-slavery Whig Party. I'm sure the subject of slavery would have been a cause of political changes for a lot of people at this time. She became a strict abolitionist, supporting Abraham Lincoln and the new Republican Party. She wrote a lot of very clearly patriotic songs that supported the Union cause, including the popular Civil War song, "There is a Sound Among the Forest Trees." I've never heard of it, but it was popular. She wrote it with William B. Bradbury in February of 1864. It encouraged volunteers to join the Union forces. And much later in 1908, she wrote patriotic poems for the Daughters of the American Revolution. So she just really liked writing stuff like that. In 1868, Fanny met Phoebe Palmer Knapp, who is married to Joseph Fairchild Knapp, who is the co-founder of the Metropolitan Life Insurance Company. So, like, you know, not a huge deal or anything, just owned a life insurance company. So they had money. This is the daughter of the mother of the holiness movement, with whom she wrote Blessed Assurance in 1873. The Knapps published hymnals for use in the Sunday school at St. John's Methodist Episcopal Church in Brooklyn, where Joseph was superintendent for 22 years. So they were providing that music for their church. Phoebe was responsible for the 200 children in the infants department. They were very, very heavily involved. They collaborated on a lot of the hymns for that hymnal. So Fanny and the Knapps collaborated on a lot of that. And then Fanny worked with Ira Sankey from 1871 to 1908. So that was a very long time that she was working with Ira Sankey. He's the one who helped make her into a household name among Protestants. Ira Sankey and Dwight Moody brought her hymns to a lot of Christians through those revival movements that I mentioned earlier. By 1874, Fanny was said to be living in a pretty destitute condition. I mean, she didn't really care about money or fame or any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. She and Alexander had apparently a very odd married life and only lived together intermittently. They separated. They did not divorce, but they did separate in 1880 and lived independently, traveled, vacationed separately, weren't really living like they were married, even though legally they were still married. They also maintained an amicable relationship. They played concerts together at certain points after this time. So like they were still friends. They just like weren't really living like they were married. She lived in this dismal flat near one of the worst slums in Manhattan until about 1884. She was very concerned about the conditions of the poor, and that will come up a little bit later. She met William J. Kirkpatrick in 1877. He was a very prolific gospel song tune composer and, quote, the most prominent publisher in the Wesleyan holiness movement. So she wrote a lot of hymns with him, including I Am Thine, O Lord, which reflected her call to consecrated Christian living. She joined the Cornell Memorial Methodist Episcopal Church by confession of faith in 1887. That seemed to be the Methodist Episcopal denomination seemed to be where she stuck for most of her life. And I had to side quest this a little bit because the Methodist Episcopal denomination is very confusing to me. If it is confusing to you also, I have a tiny side quest. It is the oldest and largest Methodist denomination in the U.S. from its founding in 1784 until 1939, when it reunited with the Methodist Protestant Church and the Methodist Episcopal Church South to form the Methodist Church. And then in 1968, that church merged with the Evangelical United Brethren Church to form the United Methodist Church. And didn't they just had a split recently too, didn't they?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So it is and still evolving.
So it's really interesting whenever you're talking about denominations in the 1900s or the 1800s, it's very similar to when you're talking about political parties.
Yeah.
Because the name might be associated with a movement that looks very different than what it has evolved into today.
Yep.
You definitely see this in political parties where Democrats and Republicans, some of their platform points have pretty much flipped back and forth several times over the last 200 years.
Yeah.
But yeah, same with church bodies, that the denominational labels in the 1800s may not actually align very neatly with the denominations as we see them today, at least in practice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There were also a lot of denominations happening in the United States at this time. This is in our podcast series with Dr. Cameron McKenzie, the amount of Lutheran denominations in the late 1800s. There's so many. So many. And that's why they kind of all congealed together to form much bigger bodies. But yeah, at this time period, there's just so, so many.
Yeah.
The Methodist Episcopals began in the first Great Awakening in the 1730s and 40s, when Methodism became an evangelical revival movement within the Church of England that stressed being born again and the possibility of Christian perfection. It spread to the 13 colonies by the 1760s, and Methodist societies formed under John Wesley, hence the Wesleyan movements. Mm-hmm. American Methodists remained affiliated with the Church of England. Of course, this wasn't going to work with the American Revolution, though. So John Wesley ordained the first Methodist elders for America in 1784. And under that leadership, the Methodist Episcopal Church adopted episcopal polity. There you go. And an itinerant model of ministry. The episcopal is the polity part. That makes sense now. Wesleyan believes episcopal polity. Cool. It was anti-elitist and anti-slavery, and it grew during the Second Great Awakening with these revivalism and camp meetings. And so by the early 1800s, by the time Fanny was hanging out with them, it was the largest and most influential religious denomination in the U.S. Here ends the side quest. Okay. Mm. We are in 1896. Fanny Crosby moved from Manhattan to an apartment in a poor section of Brooklyn near the home of Ira Sankey and his wife Fanny, another Fanny, and near the mansion owned by Phoebe Knapp. So she moved to be close to her friends, basically. Mm. Fanny talks about how she would always begin her hymn writing with prayer, which even in her day, she said, seemed old-fashioned, but a good thing to do. Sometimes she would compose 6 or 7 hymns a day. She was cranking them out. She composed entirely in her mind, and sometimes had as many as 12 going on in her brain before she dictated them to someone. I can't even, how? Mm. It's wild. It's amazing. I mean, she had such a gift. Fanny couldn't write much more than her name. So, and even that apparently was pretty illegible. So someone like her husband or one of her half-sisters, Carrie, who comes up later, or her secretary would write them for her. And she really didn't compose music much at all, except for one or maybe two things. So music was not her thing. Words were her thing. Mm-hmm. She kept on writing hymns through the early 1900s, and she will always probably be best known for her hymns. But she always wanted to be known for her work as a rescue mission worker. And this has been a theme for most of her life. It just wasn't the big theme. A lot of her hymns came about because of her work with the city missions, like More Like Jesus, Pass Me Not, O Gentle Savior, and Rescue the Perishing. So she had lived for a long time in these areas of Manhattan and near the slums. She was very aware of the needs of immigrants and the urban poor, very concerned about them. And she often used her royalty money to help those around her. She wouldn't set prices for her speaking engagements, and she often refused honoraria. So she just really wasn't concerned about money. She was really committed during the 1880s and 1890s. This is retirement age. She's 70 and 80 years old here, to devote her life to missionary work. She dedicated her time as Auntie Fanny, which is just great. She called herself Auntie Fanny to various city rescue missions.
Oh, she was a New Englander. She was definitely Auntie Fanny.
Sorry, Auntie Fanny. Auntie Fanny. She spoke at...
Sorry.
No, you're right. It was in my head as auntie, but I just don't say auntie.
I know.
She spoke at YMCAs and churches about the needs of the urban poor. And the YMCA was just founded in the 1850s in Boston. So this was a pretty new thing for her to be involved in. They were also very concerned about the poor and keeping people off the streets. She was also a supporter of the Women's Christian Temperance Union, which immediately transports me back to my AP US history class in high school. I don't know how many people wrote that. And wrote the words for the Red Pledge to advocate for total abstinence from alcohol. This was a hot topic at this time, among other things at the turn of the century. She continued to write a lot of hymns and songs from her experiences in all of these missions. Her health really began to decline in the early 1900s, which makes sense. She was over 80 years old at this point. Friends were helping to pay for her needs, and her half-sisters helped her when she had a pretty serious heart condition and ended up moving in with one of them, Carrie Ryder, in Bridgeport, Connecticut. Her husband died in 1902, and sadly, she couldn't attend his funeral due to her own health issues. Hmm. Her friend Phoebe Knapp, however, paid for his burial in Queens. So her friends were very loyal to her. Sunday, March 26, 1905, was Fanny Crosby Day in many denominations around the world to celebrate her 85th birthday. Wow. She spoke at her sister church, First Baptist in Bridgeport. At this point, I mean, when you get to your 80s, you start losing your friends because you're all just mm-hmm. their age, yeah. right? So she lost three people in close proximity. Her sister Carrie died in 1907 due to cancer. Phoebe Knapp died in 1908. And Ira Sankey also died in 1908. So some of her closest people all died around that time. Always an inspirational person, however. Fanny spoke in front of 5,000 people at Carnegie Hall in May 1911 for the opening of the Evangelistic Committee. How old was she? She was 91, guys.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
It's incredible.
It is.
The crowd, I'm so glad she was born in 1820. I can do this math in my head. The crowd sang her songs for a half hour. Like, that's when she was 92 in 1912, she visited Harvard to tell them about her relative, Samuel Crosby, one of their founders. Because why not? In 1914, on her 94th birthday, a Violet Day was organized for her honor and was publicized nationally. Like, such a well-known, well-loved person. Fanny died in Bridgeport, Connecticut on February 12th, 1915, just shy of her 95th birthday after a six-month illness. She was buried in Bridgeport near her mother and the rest of her family, and her family put up a little tombstone with the words that she wanted, which is so perfect. Auntie Fanny, she hath done what she could. Fanny J. Crosby. It's beautiful.
That is. And that's in
Bridgeport, Connecticut.
That's in Bridgeport. Okay.
Yes. Mm. Yep.
Okay.
In March 1925, 3,000 churches observed Fanny Crosby Day to commemorate what would have been her 105th birthday. So she was not soon forgotten. Huh. Mm-hmm. She left money in her will for a Fanny Crosby home for the aged. So even in death, she wanted to care for the poor. It opened on November 1st, 1925, after the Federation of Churches raised $100,000 to operate it.
Oh.
It was open until 1996, which is a long time.
Wow.
And then it was given to the Bridgeport Rescue Mission. In 1955, a large memorial stone was dedicated by her friends who were inspired by her life. I'm kind of guessing that was like the sons and daughters of her friends because... Mm-hmm. That's a long time after her life. Even though she did not want a huge gravestone, it had the first stanza of Blessed Assurance written on it. That's got to be her most well-known one. I feel like everyone knows that.
Yeah.
She was posthumously inducted into the Gospel Music Hall of Fame in 1975. And her hymns are still in a lot of hymnals. And she continues to be the source of music for many Christians around the world. I think we can appreciate her hymnity, leaving aside her Wesleyan theology, but a lot of her hymns have been a source of hope and strength for many, many Christians over the years.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, have your Martin Lutherans, Paul Sparatus, and Paul Gerhardt, your meat and potatoes of our Lutheran hymnity, but there's nothing wrong with a little snack of dessert, Fanny Crosby.
As well. I mean, honestly, I have to say, I find it so admirable and enviable the discipline that she instilled from childhood of memorization of scripture. And, you know, some of it, I'm sure like that's a reality of living in the non-digital age. If you want to be able to. You can't just read scripture if you're blind.
Right.
And so like if you want to be able to ponder it, like you do rely more on memory, but still that's so admirable.
Yeah.
Yeah. A woman of faith and virtue and devotion and generosity. I mean, the story is very inspiring and I do love several of her hymns very much.
Uh-huh.
I did while you were telling us her story, I did scour the web and I can find no evidence of a Fanny Crosby hymn in any Lutheran hymnal. I even looked through the index of All God's People Sing and the Lutheran Book of Worship, and maybe I missed something somewhere, but
Joel ones.
Yeah, I don't think she's in any of them.
She's not. And that, of course, is a decision for more theologically astute minds than us. But right. I can say that I have been blessed by her hymns.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially I love To God Be the Glory.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
To God be the glory, great things he hath done. So loved he the world that he gave us his son, who yielded his life in atonement for sin and opened the doorway that all may come in. Praise the Lord. I mean, it's just, they're simple, but they're so beautiful.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Uh-huh. I love it.
Her hymns are in Lift Every Voice and Sing 2, an African-American hymnal, and the African-American Heritage Hymnal. So those are her more recent ones that she's included in.
All right.
Yeah.
Cool.
That's a fun
story. I learned things, but I didn't know.
Yeah. A very fun, inspiring story, too.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So she is awarded the gold medal in hymn writing polyphony.
Uh-huh.
And here ends episode 1 of Hymnastics.
Yay!
As a reminder, ladies, if you're inspired to write a hymn or record a hymn, we'll have that link in the show notes for this episode and also in our Facebook group and on our Instagram page if you'd like to participate in our Hymnastics.
Don't forget, common meter, uncommon occasion. You have been challenged.
I love it so much. That will be our next episode. No, that's our third episode. Our next one is still a mystery. And it will be great. It's always great.
Yeah. Yeah.
I imagine I'll be playing some fancy music right here. Happy Hymnastics and Winter Olympics. It's a fun time of year to celebrate all of these things. You can join us in our Facebook group, the Lutheran Ladies Lounge, or on our Instagram page at Lutheran Ladies Lounge. You can also find all of our podcast episodes at KFUO.org/Lutheran Ladies Lounge or on your favorite podcasting app or on the KFUO radio app. You're listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Rachel.
Views and opinions expressed on the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast may not represent the official position of the management or ownership of KFUO Radio, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. The Lutheran Ladies Lounge is produced by KFUO Radio and available at KFUO.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and leave a review for us, too. If you love the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast, consider financially supporting our producer, KFUO Radio, so we can keep doing what we do. Find out how at KFUO.org/give.